Welcome to episode 162 of the RHO podcast. I'm pretty sure I called next week's episode 162 also on the audio and the video, so ignore that. I wasn't 100% decided on which one was going to come out first, but this one is, obviously. It's coming out today, and next week's is coming to you from Lake Shelbyville, the archery park that they just opened up there. We were at the grand opening for that. We got to talk to a few different people about everything they got going on around there. It was a really good episode, so make sure you catch that next week. But on this episode, we're talking to Ryan from Vantage Point Archery. We're going to be talking to him about how their broadheads are made, what it means to be made in America, kind of how that affects them as a company, being made in America, and a lot of different other things as well along the lines of hunting broadheads, manufacturing even. We got into some of that stuff because that's what they are. They're an American manufacturer. So we really enjoyed talking to Ryan. We had him on episode, I believe it was 131 before, so go check out that one. Him and Jeff, two of the owners at the company, they gave us kind of their background and then kind of the origin story of VPA, if you will. And then we got a little more in the weeds on stuff this week. So I think you guys are going to enjoy it. This is Ryan from Vantage Point Archery with me and Nate. We were going to have Ryan and Jeff on like we did last time. Jeff wasn't able to make it, so we got Ryan here with us. Just for those who didn't, and you, everybody listening, you can go back to 131, I believe was the episode you were on before. Everybody go back and listen to that. They'll get your background on that because we went pretty deep on your upbringing and hunting and everything. And kind of, you're a little bit of a newer bow hunter, which I guess
I am. Yeah.
I say newer. It's been 7 years now. Didn't you say 2018?
Yeah.
So, yep. I mean, you're getting up to Wiley veteran status. I think that starts about 10 or 12 years. So
almost there, right? All these gray hairs make me be that, but I'm really not that. I'm just like a kid out there.
Right.
Making all those stupid mistakes.
Right.
So which way is the wind going?
Exactly.
My bad.
Never the direction you need it to be going. I promise
that's right.
That.
That's right.
But they can go back and listen to that, kind of get some background on you. But just bring us up to speed on VPA real quick and kind of tell us, just give us the quick background on you guys, kind of where you started and what you do, and then we'll dive in from there.
Yeah. So it's me and then Jeff Stringer and then Rob Troxler are the owners at VPA. I started in 2018. I told the guys last time, like, that was the first time I ever picked up a bow, and it was, man, it's like drinking from a fire hose. Mm-hmm. Like, I just got my second Matthews last week, and I'm looking at that thing, and man, I get to tie in my own peep for the first time. I get to like do a lot of that stuff that I've learned how to do over the past like 7 years, and like put my own rest on, put my own sight on, like before I let everybody else do that for me, because I'm just like, I don't know how to do that.
Right.
And it's just a lot of fun for me now because I've been tinkering for so long and I'm getting in those weeds and having a lot of fun with that. VPA is a broadhead company. We're based out of Fort Wayne, Indiana. We make solid one piece broadheads in America. And I know that's everybody's like, you can't do that. Well, we can. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it. We've been doing it since around 2008. We white label for a ton of companies. We have a fun group of about 40 employees that like a lot of them eat, breathe, and hunt, right? Like that's what they like to do. So it's a fun time in the shop, and we're always tinkering, and just like from podcasts like this, like people hearing our story and what we're doing and connecting with them, and then I'll call them like, hey, can you do this, or can you do that, or why haven't you tried this, or why not work on that? And I'm like, okay, yeah, We can do that. So that's kind of the short story. For me at VPI, I'm on the sales side. I talk to guides every day. I talk arrow builds. I talk strategies. I mean, like every day I get to talk hunting stories, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. So everybody's like, do you get sick? I'm like, no, I don't get sick of talking hunting because it's different wherever I'm talking to people out from all the way out west to where they're going in South Africa to where they're going in Texas to like, what's your setup here? So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt. That's awesome. I do definitely want to dive into the Made in America thing, because that, as you know, I'm sure, is a very hot topic right now with everything that's going on globally, economically. And there's actually been some companies and some guys that we've talked to and kind of had some dealings with that even before this stuff, I think ran into some troubles because of having their manufacturing overseas and the fact that there's not a lot of quality control with that. A lot of other things too, that basically, and it just comes down to trying to make a few extra bucks on their product, right? So we might as well start there. I know it's very important for you guys to be made in the USA. why is it, I mean, just outline for people who maybe don't really understand it, why is that so important to you guys, and what does that mean at VPA to be able to put that on your guys' package?
That's probably one of the top, like, besides ethical integrity and Made in USA, I don't know if there's anything else that I would really want to stand on. I'm sure there's something else in there, but like, when I think about Made in the USA, it's something that like I take back to like my grandpa, right? Like, and him showing me how to sharpen my first case knife and doing that on a whetstone and learning like that. And I knew where that was made, right? Now, man, there's maybe only, I bet you can count on two hands, 10 maybe, that are made in the USA on knives that people can buy, like that are really like true, like maybe not, maybe there's more and maybe I'm miscounting that, but I know you can count on one hand, like Made in the USA broadheads that aren't like outsourcing, whether it be materials, screws, you name it, right? Like ferrules, like all that stuff is coming. It's not coming from the States. It's being made somewhere else. And I think that's something heavily like with VPA that we really tout, like, hey, we're getting our steel from here. We're bringing all of our material in from local delivery guys. We're machining it. Our recycling's going back to USA. We're using heat treat locally. We're using black oxide or Duracoat or Cerakote locally. Like, those are all focal Fort Wayne companies in Indiana that we use. Like, there's no process in from 1 pound of material that starts with that broadhead down to 100 grains. So 7,000 grains down to 100 grains. It's all made in the US. And then on that side of point, like, I know Jeff talked about this a lot the last time. Like, we want to employ people in America. Like, we want to make, we employ not 40 people, we employ 40 families in our shop. That's something that we're big on and what we love.
Yeah, that's a big thing to me, with especially a lot of the conversations you see right now around this with all the tariffs and stuff, is a lot of people complaining about how they're affecting them, how they're affecting prices, how they're affecting their business. And to me, it's, for some industries, maybe it's not as simple as this, but I really think it is. Make this stuff here. We are so rich with, what's the word I'm looking for?
Natural resources.
Yeah, we have so many resources.
Everything else, not just natural resources, but we have everything here.
Exactly. I mean, whatever it is that they're trying to make, whatever product, industry they're in, we have the stuff to do it here. Is it going to cost a little bit more money? Probably. Am I willing to pay more money as the end consumer for something that's made in America? Absolutely. Because I know that it's probably more quality, like very good chances higher quality, right? It's also supporting, like you said, it's not just 40 workers, but it's those 40 families that money's going towards. That's super important to me. And it's, I know that it's not being made in some sweatshop where they've got kids in there working for nothing. You know, I mean, slave labor in a lot of cases is a legitimate thing overseas that we just kind of don't want to think about because we want to pay 10 less extra dollars for a pair of shoes or whatever it is, or a broadhead, you know, anything.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's another one of those. And I don't know, have you ever guys ever looked at, like, I don't know why it made me talk about like slave labor, made me think about like cocoa beans.
Yeah.
Like chocolate.
Yes.
Like slave free chocolate. Like, that's big out there. Right. And that's something that even my wife and my kids talk about, like, you're eating Hershey's chocolate. Do you know? I'm like, I don't know. Like, you guys tell me, like, like, train me up on this. I'm like,
right.
That's an 80%. So I'm like, whatever, come on. And we actually did the research on it. So that's crazy. The other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about that side was, how about like that, like, if you have a problem with your product or if you have an issue with it, or like who are you calling? Like, what's the warranty? Like, when you call us, you're talking to me or one of my other guys in the office. Like, you're talking, like, and we're answering the phone and we're answering, like, warranty, whatever, issues with an edge or the grain weights or whatever. Like, I don't get questions on grain weights anymore, but like stuff right. like that, like, you're going to talk to me or one of my other guys.
Yeah. And then, like you said, if you do have a problem, you're not waiting 4 to 14 weeks to get something shipped out and shipped back and everything like that. You know, it's pretty crazy. And it's the same people that, I guess, this is a hunting show, so we kind of talk about this. You hear all those people that are like, they want like the guilt-free food or whatever, right? Like they're maybe they're vegan or like they're against hunting because of the animals and stuff. These are the same people though that don't care about like some kid working in China on their clothes that's literally in a building with no windows, no heat or air all year long for long hours of a day. They don't care about them. They don't want us to kill deer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
There's such a double standard there, I think.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah. But for me, that's a really important thing. And I've talked about this before. We want to try to use as many products that are made in the USA as we can. And it's in the hunting space, like you said, you can probably count on one hand the amount of broadheads that are actually made in America, let alone all the other products, right?
I don't give that too much headspace, I guess. I like to think the best of those companies, but I do know that over the past, like, we're in May, in the last almost 5.5 months, we've got a lot more requests for quotes, RFQs.
Very good.
Because, you know what I mean? Because there are those companies in our space who are like, where am I going to get that now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're coming to the guides. They're like, hey, we know this. We've got this figured out. We're a machine shop. Not only can we do ferals and stuff like that, we can do a whole gamut of stuff. So,
I know you guys talked about your manufacturing side last time. And you said you do a lot of stuff for other people within the industry too. So, I mean, I guess that's what you're talking about. Like a lot of people are coming to you guys with, hey, we've got this. We're going to try to have it made here now. Is that kind of what's going on?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of been a fun, like 5-6 months. You just kind of see those companies that are just like, oh, wow. Like I'm not going to spend 120. What is it? What's the tariff now coming out of China? 220 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't even know. Over 200.
I can't even keep track of it now. We're like, we're not going to pay that extra money. Like, can we get this here? And we're kind of like, yeah, but we don't just want your business. We want, for 4 years, we want it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, here's our terms, because what's going to happen in 4 years is going to probably go back. And then I don't know. So it's one of those things that we're looking really hard at those companies and looking at their integrity and making sure that like they are who they say they are.
Yeah.
Let's face it. We want to make sure we're building good relationships and we can trust them just as long as like, if we say we're going to do it, right, like we want to make sure that we're going to be able to qualify for that too.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you guys manufacture the most outside of like your broadheads? What are some things that you guys are really into?
Compensators on the gun side.
Okay.
We do a lot of those. Yeah. The compensators are a lot of fun. On the armory side, like that list is just growing like every month on how many more compensators we're making. I think we're up to like 20 different models now,
mm-hmm.
22 different models, and getting ready to add another two. We're in that gun space too. Like we're doing a lot of like special products mm-hmm. I can't really talk about because they're for other people, but like,
right.
I love that space. Excuse me. I love that space of like, going to a high-end rifle manufacturer and seeing how they're making stuff, and then us being like, hey, we can help you out with that. Like, give us a shot. Like, we can show you that we can do that stuff too.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. And that really has grown because the last 2 years we've been at SHOT Show.
Okay.
We've been on that side of the archery and armory.
Uh-huh.
And just being able to make those connections with people. Like, well, if you can make this, then you can make this, right? We're like, well, heck yeah. Give us a shot. So that's grown the business, and that's a whole nother. Man, boom boom sticks, those are a lot of fun.
Like, for sure.
Like, I shot those since I was a kid, right? Like, I've always shot rifles, but like those long precision stuff like that, like I trick out in that. So it's kind of fun.
Cool. That's actually something I was going to ask, is if you guys were at SHOT Show, and I know you do ATA too, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I did a whole episode on this, I think, after we had went to ATA. And everybody, it seems like a lot of people you talk to there, and I know, Nate, you had some experience there 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And the show is just not near what it used to be with ATA. Like, it's a dying show, for lack of better words, just to put it plain and simple, right? It seems that way.
Hey, they're changing it this year.
Okay, so I wanted to get your take on the comparing of the two shows. And I actually heard some rumblings about, like, maybe SHOT Show even trying to buy ATA. I don't know how much truth there was to that. But what... What's kind of been your experience with SHOT Show and the ATA? And then you said they're maybe changing something this year?
Yeah, I got an email on it a couple weeks ago. First thing is SHOT Show, you have 100 times the amount of people, right? Mm-hmm. Like in that archery pavilion area that they're trying to grow is growing.
Okay.
I think they're going to run that till just to like, I think they said like 2030, just to see if they could get it big enough. The good thing for us is we're on the armory side, so we can pick a booth in the main hall, not in the archery side.
Yeah.
We get less traffic, but the archery side, even for us last year, like I was amazed at the amount of people that walked through. Yeah. If you get a chance, make sure you walk SHOT Show. It's worth doing once. It really is. Like it's amazing. It's amazing. On the ATA side, they are adding an extra day this year to allow the public in.
Okay. So it's going to be a consumer facing show then as well.
As far as what I read in the email. Yes. Yep. They're going to try to do that. And that's something that, I know from our standpoint, when we met with the president last year, that's something we told him, like, hey, it's not hard for us to change out that pricing, right? Like we have dealers the first day, the second day is a little bit more. And then why not do a consumer day where they can come in and walk through and see the new bows and see the new rests and see the new releases and see all that stuff? Because let's face it, they're the ones that are going to be buying it from the local bow shop.
Yeah.
It's not like for me, it's easier for me to sell to my local guys and my bow shops and those like those archery countries and those Josh Jones and Lancaster and those guys, and to get that my stuff to them, that way they can deal and they can set it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the best thing for them, to set it up right there when they're in the shop. Because let's face it, a single piece broadhead, like you got to take a little bit of time to set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've got to. So yeah, I'm excited for that. I think that should go well. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. And if you're coming out to Indianapolis this year, make sure you spend a day and come up to the shop, because it's like an hour and a half.
Yeah, you guys
an hour and a half from we're an hour and a half from Indy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we plan on going back again. I was at least for sure gonna give it one more year. That makes sense too, because there's a lot of people there that aren't necessarily dealers or anything as well. I mean, they're getting in the show on somebody else's pass, right? So there's consumers in there anyway. I mean, it's everybody's there. That's a place where a lot of the companies, I think if there's consumers there, you can bring some people back too. That's a place where you could probably draw a pretty good crowd. And like Nate, you can speak to what it was 10 years ago. Like it used to be a pretty impressive show.
Yeah.
10, 15 years. I don't know how many.
The last time I was there at Indy, I'd been to Indy twice, and then the year in between was Louisville, Kentucky. They had it down there. That hall was completely full, there at Indy. I mean, there was no room anywhere. And, like, there was a ton of room this year, tons of room. I mean, you could have had a couple basketball courts set up, with the amount of space that was just left over.
Mm-hmm.
And guys were saying, every year it just seems to be getting a little smaller for whatever reason.
Yeah. So I think it was a year before, was it? Yeah. Yeah, because they did St. Louis, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then they did before that was Indy, or was it Louisville? Anyways, in between there, they had the NRA show there, and I went down for both. And I was just amazed at how big the NRA show was compared. And it's two different things, right?
Right.
But still, I'm like in the same hall and everything, and they had that thing packed full in every location of that hall down there. I'm like, holy smokes, this is so different than what the ATA show is.
Right.
Because it was my first year going to the NRA show because it was local and I wanted to go see one.
Mm-hmm. So here's something that we didn't really get into last time. You guys do, like you said, the one piece from a pound down to however many grains the broadhead is, correct, with your materials and everything. Why did you guys decide to go that route when you decided to get into broadheads? Was there like a specific reason, or did it make sense because you guys had the equipment to do that kind of stuff, or did one come before the other? Like how did that all go down for you guys when you started?
Yeah, a couple things. And this is just from me talking to the engineer. His name's Jeff Miller. He's still at the shop. He's still the guy that designed the first broadhead back in 2008. Everything back then was like metal and starting on that metal injection, mm-hmm. right? They were going to that MEMS, and they were still using brazing on some of them. And he had an idea, like, to set it up on a lathe and take a bar stock, right? 7,000 grains is 1 pound, and then to whittle out, it almost looks like a like plumb bob, like if you're doing like a plumb bob, that's what they kind of look like off the first step. And then you go and you machine out your threads and your ferrules and all that good stuff on second out. But like he had that, and the big thing for us is concentration, like run out in the broadhead. So on those long ones, if you're talking like 200 grains, like we're talking from, if you're 2.5 inches and run out in that broadhead is probably going to be 0.0003 or something like three tenths. Like, and that's how we know that like they're flying well. And that's what we want to keep. That way everything is machined the same direction and then it's sharp in the same direction. That way, no matter what, we can make sure that it's spinning true. I haven't had a guy, man, since I think probably around that 18, where I had some calls on that, like, hey, things aren't running true. And that's when we went to a different sharpening style and actually were probing sharpening and doing a lot of that stuff now. That on the other side, like when you think about a pack of broadheads, like grain weights, right? Like we say that our broadheads are plus five minus none. And then on that side of like we're already batching them. So like you're getting broadheads if it's 100 grains, like 101, 101.4, 101.7. Like almost like pretty much match grade, right? Like that's pretty cool when you think about that when you're starting from 7,000 grains and going down.
Yeah, pretty accurate.
So we get in those fine tooths. We get in the those machinists that we have on the floor are pretty amazing what they can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
So what does that process look like from when, and once it's machined down, like, is there a sharpening process after that it's been machined, or is that all in the same kind of process? And then, like, what happens after that? And obviously, nothing proprietary here.
I'm not gonna
Giving
tell
away
anything
any
that anybody else
secrets.
does. They don't know anything, or that they don't already know.
Right.
So after you manufacture the broadhead, then it goes out to heat treat. So you heat treat it. That way we know that our rock well, a 1045 steel, we rock well that between 52 and 54. On your S7 material, we rock well that between 56 and 58. Then it comes back and we send it out to whether Duracoat or black oxide, Cerakote or Duracoat. Using more Cerakote now. I'm liking the way that's turning out. A little bit more expensive, but I think it's worth it. I really like Cerakote. Plus you can get it kind of slick too, which I really like. It's kind of weird. And then you go sh and then you do sharpening.
What's
So sharpening is the last thing.
okay, that makes sense. And then is it like sharpened straight from there to the packaging?
We store them in army in ammo cans in
Really?
oil. Yep. So they're stored in the ammo cans. That way we can just like when I do a batch of say 3S100s for sale, I'll run a batch of probably around 1,000 of them, and then they'll go through the process, and then I make sure that they're stored in ammo cans. Keep them oiled. That way I know they're sealed tight and no air is getting to them.
Yeah. So you're not having any corrosion issues or anything like that, obviously.
Don't have hardly any of that. You know what the cool thing is? That every once in a while, and I've got some on my desk, like from black oxide, you almost get like this tiger or this pattern on them. And some guys don't like it, so I kind of just keep them around. But I think they look really cool. And I wish I could repeat that process because I know I can sell a ton of
Yeah, you can
them.
market
I
that.
could, yeah. Like they just look, they're light in areas, and you get brown, you get blacks, and like they're pretty cool.
Does the what difference is it on the coatings? Like you said, you like that Cerakote a lot. Is there what's kind of the difference between those, and why do you like that better than others?
I think I like Cerakote over Duracoat because the we had some issues when we first started sharpening with the Duracoat. It would burn. Like the heat temperature rating on Duracoat is a little bit less. And I don't know those specs on that. I just know that I found a super cool dude that loves our broadheads by us that does Cerakote. And I'm like, oh, this is it. Like we can switch this over, start using Cerakote. And colors, like think about that. Like I can do any color I want in Cerakote. And you can kind of do the same in Duracoat, but like man, you can get tricked out with Cerakote, and like you can paint them off, and then we can like laser them, and then we can I'm excited for our 4th of July broadheads this year, because we're going to trick them out and do something cool.
That'll be awesome. Are you guys, do you guys do like a custom broadhead, or you guys do like, do you do different colors now?
No, I
No?
don't. Not yet. I probably should. I'm gonna sneeze, so
No, you're
no, it
fine.
went away.
It's all good.
Oh, okay. I could, but then it's like, where does it stop?
Yeah.
Think about it. Like, I've got like 73 different SKUs on broadheads right now.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm adding different colors to them, and then I'm adding like, it's
Yeah.
like, oh my God. Like, so that's why we kind of offer. We do a 4th of July. I'm gonna try to do something in a red, white, and blue, probably on an Omega, probably in that either that 150 or that 125 range.
Yeah.
We're seeing that trend, believe it or not. More and more guys are going up to that 150. I've seen that track even higher this year, and I can't believe it. Because I used to
Yeah.
say we need to get an Omega down to 100 grains, and now I'm thinking, man, I'm not selling as many of those Omegas, the 100 grains. I'm selling more of the 125s and the
Yeah.
bleeders. That's
Yeah.
probably because I have the bleeder.
Could, yeah, I would say so. I
Yep.
personally, I really like bleeders on a fixed blade. But I know last time we talked, you said that the 100 grain 3-blade was still like one of the most popular, but you're seeing that trend a little bit heavier now.
Yeah. Yep. I am. And even I said even 7 times or whatever, dude. Edit that too.
Yeah, I'll make sure and cut that out.
Okay. How about like the 100 grain? You're right. The 100 grain tracked really high for a long time. It is still in the top 10, but I'm seeing guys, especially even in the Western states, go up, which I love to see, right? Like, I think they're starting to get that whole side of like, yeah, I can shoot 125 and 150 out to 70. I
Yeah.
can shoot 125 out to 60 and still be accurate. I can send that. What do you think, Nate? Like, are you afraid to send that out that far?
I've always liked light. I really have.
Okay. Okay.
That's why I picked out those hundreds, for sure.
Okay.
I've always liked light. I know there's a whole lot of guys who are going heavy arrow, but I don't know. I've always liked
Dude,
just as
I'm
light
not
as I can
saying
be.
ranch very heavy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going down that track with you. What I'm saying is between, so are you at 420 on your arrow build?
I'm about 450, 455.
Okay.
I like
What's it look like to go 125, then you have a bleeder, and then
it.
you're shooting 475,
It would not amount to
480?
that many feet per second. I know it wouldn't, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yep, I know it wouldn't. But I just, man, I don't know why. I've always wanted to get light and try to go fast, you know. But anyway, if I'm missing them, it still doesn't matter, right?
With that 125 last year, and you were a
It
little
would
high, it
it
would have
would have
dropped
dropped right in. Probably dropped him like a bad
Yep.
habit too.
Yeah, he probably were spined him, and it just
Yep.
been,
It'd have been over with.
yeah.
That's with the bows too nowadays, though. I do feel like you can get away with a little bit more weight too, because you don't have to sacrifice even like a smooth draw to go a little bit higher poundage. I was telling Nate, I picked up a Bowtech SX80, and I have shot 70-pound bows from like, you know, 10, 12 years ago that are way harsher to draw than that 80-pound bow on the smooth setting, because Bowtech has like, which I think a couple of them do now, but they have those where you can go to like a performance or the smooth on your cams. So
Okay.
that 80-pound bow actually draws, it's way more pleasant than some of the 70-pound bows that I shot in the past. So I think that's something too. Guys aren't having to sacrifice poundage on their limbs for a draw cycle or a better shooting experience, or worried about
Yeah.
being cold and not being able to draw that bow. So now, let's say I'm a guy, I used to shoot 60, 62 pounds all the time. I bumped up to 70, and then I've got that 82 for when I'm feeling froggy, I guess. But that's something where you can get away with that 25 extra grains or even that 50 extra grains. If you're bumping from 60 to 70 pounds, you're gaining a lot of energy there and some feet per second to make up for that.
Yep, definitely. I did some was it last summer? Look, we had a Doppler radar out at the shop with Daryl Barnett. We were just messing around. And just on that side of like, I had a bunch of arrows just laid out with different, with used all the same inserts, used everything the same, but I just kept going up in like broadhead weight and changing that weight just to see where that FPS and making sure, like, just playing around, right? Just to make sure that everything was good. And I settled, man, I settled at 125. Like, and I'm my I've told Prophet King this, like, my bottom pin here in Indiana set at 40 yards, right? So it's not like it really matters.
Right.
Not like I'm going far.
Right.
So
That's another thing
yeah.
on the whitetail side too, because I'm sure that's probably most of who you're selling broadheads to, right? Like, probably whitetail hunters mostly.
I would say that, yeah, but like I said, like, man, the Western hunters are picking up.
Yeah.
Like Utah, like I was surprised last year. I'm like,
Really?
holy smokes. Like, yeah, we're picking up a lot out there.
Yeah. But
And even in Oregon and Washington, and probably that's more because of the talking head out that way, right? He likes our stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which I appreciate.
for sure.
Yeah.
I do like a little bit heavier. Like I'm 525-ish because I'm hunting. I'm like 40 yards and in. You know what I mean? Like what you're
Okay.
saying. For shooting, I know my spots. I'm shooting. I don't know. There's places I can shoot over 40 yards and I can do it, but I also know that 90% of my shots are going to be 40 yards and in. So I can go a little bit heavier. I'm not worried about it. You know what I mean? And it's, I think maybe there's a lot of that too with the weight, but definitely a lot of, it's gained a lot of traction within like the influencers too, it seems like, going with a heavier arrow weight, which has to have quite a bit to do with it, I'd think.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Yep. And for us in the shop, like whether you're 100 grain or whether you're 200 grains, I'm not change. I don't want to change your mind. I want to know what your yardage is. Like, are you shooting a buffalo at 20 yards
Right.
and your pH says that you have to have a 700 grain arrow? Okay. That makes sense. Like, are you shooting an elk and you want to reach out to 80 and you want to shoot at 375? Okay, I know what you're looking. I know what you have to have up front, right? It's that instance of like we. I want to talk more like, okay, what's your yoke? Okay, like, are you matching that? Okay, like, why are you doing that backwards? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Do you understand? Like, have you noctuned? Well, have you paper tuned? Like, let's get there because I want to make sure that that bow is performing as well as it is before you stick the sharp pointy thing on the end.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And that I do think that's something that scares a lot of guys from fixed blades and probably has drove a lot of guys away from them when, especially when mechanicals and expandables started becoming super popular because there is less tuning with most of them, not all of them. They're still,
Yeah.
and they're still going to fly different than the field point. I don't care what kind of broadhead it is. You put blades on it, it's going to fly a little bit different than your field point, but it's a lot closer than, let's say, a three blade fixed blade that's 125, 150 grains, right? There's a little bit more work and tuning involved in that most of the time. In my opinion, it can be worth it, especially depending on what situation you're in or what your concerns are, I guess, with your shooting. But I do feel like that's maybe that we're starting to see a trend of guys with even more influencers in the archery space promoting like tuning bows and working on your stuff, right? I think maybe that has a little bit to do with it too. It seems like there's more of that out there right now too.
I would venture to say you're 100% correct on that. And how many guys in the past 5 years have gotten bow presses in their house?
Yeah.
I think we would be that would be like astronomical when we could see that, right? I don't have one in my house, but I have one in the shop, so it's kind of
Right.
like,
Yeah.
right? It's one of those things that's on the side of like, I want to learn this. I want to be able to do this. And how many guys are building their own arrows now?
Yeah.
I bet there's a ton of them that are doing that because let's face it, we want to tinker and we want to get this stuff and figure it out. That way we understand it. And that talking head might not be right.
Right.
And we want to figure it out for ourselves and make sure that what he's saying is jiving with what I'm figuring out. So I think that's a big thing that like guys are looking at, like, I'm not going to take his word for it. I'm going to figure it out on myself.
Yeah.
And some guys are doing it and some guys aren't. Like, let's face it, some guys aren't doing it well, so they're still going back to the bow shop. And that's okay,
Yeah.
which I love, right? I'm that guy too. I've got a great guy that I know and love, and he'll help me out when I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I can't figure this out.
Yeah. Man, I think that's something that we miss a lot, too, from even 20 years ago when bow shops were super popular and there were a lot more of them around, is for the guys that don't have the time to tinker with it, don't want to mess with it, don't want to learn how to do it, or maybe they just can't. Maybe they can't figure something out. And I've been that way, too. Like, if there's something I can't get right, it's nice to be able to take it to a shop and have a guy that knows what he's doing work on it. Because, like you're saying, it get that thing tuned up before you put the sharp thing on the end of it and go try to kill something. Like, it's for accuracy and consistency, you got to have that bow tuned. But I do think that, like I said, there's more of a shift towards that.
Sorry.
You're good. You look at the guys like the Chris B's, John Dudley's, Cam Haynes, even the Hunting Public, like these super popular influencers now and guys that have really good channels and stuff on YouTube. That's what they're putting out there. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. And even like you said, if it's not a guy that says, okay, I'm going to do this exactly like Dudley did it, but hey, I saw Dudley do this, so I know I can try that. And yeah. I want to see if he's right or not, like just like what you said. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think that probably bodes well for the broadheads that you guys are putting out, right? Like you're probably seeing people that are less afraid to go that route.
I think it's too, like you said it in your text message last year, man, like, man, I put these on, they flew really good. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Like you didn't have to do hardly any work. Like they just flew well.
Right.
That's the one thing, like, but here's the caveat to that. I know that your bow is well tuned.
Right.
Right. And I know that, like, going into it, if a guy doesn't have, like, they're always like, hey, will these fly straight? And I'm like, they will fly really well if your bow is well tuned.
Yes.
Like if it's well tuned and you've got it set up really well. Mm-hmm. If not, like, you're going to be frustrated, and don't be afraid to call me or go to your bow tech and be like, throw the arrow or throw the broadhead. Like, why isn't this doing it? He's going to help you. He's going to walk through it with you on mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing that I've seen in the past, even change over the past like 3 years, where I used to get a lot of those calls on guys like, man, this just isn't flying right. Okay, let's talk about your rest. How's that look? Let's like, what are your fletchings? Like, what do those look like? Hey, what's like, let's go through this. And now I don't get those calls anymore for the single fact that guys are doing a lot of work that's themselves, I think.
Yeah.
I really think they are.
Yep. I think so too. And that's something that, like, we were talking even before. You asked how much we got to use them, and I'm just like, even super, I really want that thing to be right. So I put those things on and they flew good. But if I got to start adjusting stuff just a little bit, I want to know exactly where that arrow's going. But I think we're seeing more of that from everybody, right? Like there's been more of an emphasis on ethics and knowing where your arrow's going. And let's face it, not everybody's shooting 70, 80 yards, but if you see a guy that's doing that consistently and just driving tacks, you're like,
it's impressive.
Yeah. And it's like, gosh, I want to at least try to be able to do that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And to do that, you have to be like, it has to be locked in. You're not shooting consistently good at 50 yards, the heck 30 yards, let alone 80 or 90, unless you have everything tuned right and a good broadhead on top of that. If you're putting a broadhead on the end of it.
Yep. The one thing that this is the thing that, like, education on, like, that I would like to do even more of is finding, like, for our broadheads, I'm not afraid to shoot them in targets, right? I am not afraid to go and purchase another target,
right?
Right. I don't care. Like, if I chew up my target, I really don't care. The other thing is like, why are we not putting our broadheads on until like September, October?
Yeah.
Why not run them all year long? Because you can resharpen them. You're like, so what? It's 100 grains. It's 102 grains. You think you can sharpen off one grain and get it hair popping sharp?
Mm-hmm.
Try it. I guarantee, like, prove me wrong.
Yep.
Like, it takes months amount of work to sharpen off a grain off of a broadhead.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that I would like more, even in our end, like, the target guys are probably loving me right now for saying this, like, hey, buy more targets. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, there's that side of like, I want guys to shoot those, like, go out and throw them in targets, because the more you're throwing them in targets, the more comfortable you're going to feel with your whole setup.
Yeah.
From thinking May to June, you know what I mean? All out throughout your summer months, like, throw them on there and shoot them.
Yeah. Especially if you're going to something new or different too. And that is something I like about a fixed blade. And I think we talked about this last time. Like, I'm not one of those guys that's super dug in on either side of that spectrum. But one thing I do appreciate about a fixed blade is I put it on there and I shoot it and I know where it's going, versus, if I have a mechanical that's got really small blades that I'm worried about breaking in a target, or retainers that I have to consistently buy, rubber bands that I've seen on some of them, things like that, I might put on that practice tip. But anybody that shot them knows that practice tip doesn't always fly. The profile is not even the same as those broadheads are. So it's not flying exactly the same. When I put on a fixed blade, I know exactly where that thing's flying after I've shot it into the target, right? So that's something I can really appreciate about shooting a fixed blade, is knowing what you've got, being able to shoot it into a target, like you're saying, and then having that confidence from shooting the target that that arrow is going where your pin's at when you pull it back on an animal.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, you're exactly right.
So
exactly right.
Tell us about you guys got, you talked a little bit about the Omega with the bleeders. Tell us about that one. If you got anything else new, I want to think last time we talked, you mentioned something that you were going to kind of start pushing more with the ATA, but I don't remember exactly what it was. Maybe it was the Omega with the bleeders. I don't remember how new that one is, but tell us about some of your guys' newer broadheads, maybe even your favorite ones, which ones you like the best and kind of why they are the most popular or why they're your favorites.
Yeah, the Omegas with bleeders, and I'll make sure you guys get some so you can try them out. Just the ease in sharpening is the one thing that I lean on. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, on the lay flat sharpening technology on Omega is huge. And when you can pull out that bleeder, it doesn't do you justice until you have it in your hand. You're like, holy smoke, this thing is so beefy. It's crazy. Released them last fall. I did not, I even told guys like, hey, I'm warranty everything on this broadhead. I did not send out one extra bleeder to anybody.
That's what you want, right? Not.
Yes, that's what I want. That's so what you want. It's kind of amazing that I can actually say that still this year. Like, I have not warrantied one bleeder whatsoever, because we've made them that thick and that solid in the broadhead.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be our flagship this year for sure. The 125, I know it will be. It might be a 150. We'll see. I actually made that Omega in 100 grains.
Mm-hmm.
You can take out that bleeder on your 125, and it becomes 100 grains, or okay. You can just buy the 100 grain heads without it. Because
yeah.
So in every one of the broadheads, the bleeder is 25 grains. What we're working on right now is really cool. It's called our Ascender series. You might have seen them at ATA. We're almost there. We're still doing a little bit refinements. I've got, I can probably explain it to you that way it can get across. It's kind of like, the broadhead goes over the shaft.
Okay.
So it's got a post that's actually going to fit into a regular insert. And then the post will screw into your regular 8/32 insert, and then it'll screw into the broadhead. So it's a male and a male.
Okay.
With different threads on it. And then that broadhead then goes over your shaft and screws in. Right now we actually started it on the crossbow size,
mm-hmm.
because there's nothing offered out there on a crossbow bolt. But I'm refining that down. I like to do 5mm 204/166, and hopefully I'll have them out by hunting season. We'll see. So
don't put any dates on anything.
I'm not putting a date on anything right now for the single. It's like I do this every stinking year. The way that we figure it out, like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I need to get the Matthews side of things where everything's out in November. Are all the bows like everything drops in November?
Uh-huh.
You get on that side. But yeah. And I think that's single because, like, I got to shoot it too, right? And I got to get it to guys like you that can, like, shoot it and put it together and be like, oh, this is super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought this was going to be a pain in the butt. But the stiffness in that with your insert and the – I don't know what we're calling it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Connector, then with your broadhead going over your shaft. Man, it is so beefy up front. Like, and it'll be at 100 grains.
Yeah.
Or it'll be at a 125 grain. That way, the head itself, right? And then everything right. else is your normal stuff. So we're building the head at 100 grains for you, your 166 and 204s. Probably 5mm.
Yeah.
Am I getting that right? Do I know my arrows well enough?
Are that you sounds right.
On that?
No, okay. That sounds right to me. What about with, you mentioned the crossbow stuff a little bit. That's something that, like, here in Illinois, Has it been, how many years ago has it been now, Nate?
Oh, gosh. Several years after second gun season, but I think it's been 2 or 3 years now, you just free-for-all.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe even, it may be, yeah, right around 3 years. They've been able to hunt with crossbows throughout the whole archery season here, so the popularity has gone way up. So have you seen that or heard from a lot of crossbow guys that are using your guys' stuff?
So the funky thing with broadheads and aerodynamics with a solid one-piece head, and our broadheads will fly out of everything, right? It's just that when you're putting a Fend 153 blade head and you're trying to shoot it at 478 FPS, at 70 yards, it's going to go like, it's going to, it does it. Like, you know, we all know it. So I always tell, like, I tell guys, hey, if you're 40 and in, you're fine. Sometimes guys can stretch that out to 50, depending upon what type of crossbow they're running and stuff like that. This broadhead, like, is machined to go 100 yards at 500 FPS. And that's what we want. There's nothing else on the market that anybody has that can fly like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. I just want to make sure all that testing is done before I like send it to the market, because I don't want to be proven wrong.
You don't want to send out a whole bunch of those, a whole bunch of warranty or do a recall.
78
right?
yards. This thing's going 3 inches right. Yeah. Seriously, dude.
Yeah. No. Right. There's a lot, you see a lot of that with broadheads, as far as they'll have their regular series and the crossbow series. I know a lot of times with like expandables, it has to do with a little bit better collar or whatever retaining system.
Does it?
To keep the blades from flying open with the feet per second. There are a few like fixed blades, I think, that they'll say they're for a crossbow versus regular ones, but I think it's just so they can charge like $10 more for them. But I wondered about how much you guys had seen that, and it sounds like with this new one you're coming out with, it's going to be really not tailored to that, but good for those guys. Because, like I said, around here, crossbows have just gotten so much more popular. I don't know how much you've seen that where you guys are at or just across the board.
Oh, definitely. In Indiana, like, I talked to some of our bigger bow shops, and they're saying it's almost like 3-1.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I believe it, because, like I said, where we're at, it seems like there's a lot of guys, even guys that used to be like the regular vertical bow guys, are going to the crossbows, and it's a lot easier. I mean, you can reach out and shoot them a lot farther, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I get why they do it. I just didn't know if you'd heard kind of the similar stuff, because you would have more exposure points than we would as far as nationally.
Okay, so here's the thing. Like, there are guys. I'll say it.
You can say it. It's okay.
I'll say it. Like, there are guys that I believe that need to use crossbows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 100%. Like, there are older men that are just still hunting. They just still want to get out there. There are vets in this country that, like, still want to go hunt, and they need to use a crossbow. There are. But if you're a 22-year-old dude and you're shooting a crossbow, like, I want to have a conversation with you.
Exactly.
I just want to have a serious conversation about where you're at and what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yep. Yep.
Like, and it's nothing against the crossbow. Like, I love shooting a crossbow, but like, I feel like you got to take away my man card a little bit. Like, take it back. Like,
at least cut a corner off.
What's that?
At least cut a corner off.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's nothing bad about them. Like, it's just the side of, like, I think they have their place and they have their purpose, and I don't think everybody should be able to use them.
Yeah. We have very similar thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's also, we've talked about it before. It's not even so much that, like, they're using the crossbow or whatever. It's like you said, like, the why are you using it? And then, to me, a lot of times it just speaks to what they're out there doing. And I'm not here to tell anybody why or how they should be hunting. But if all you're out told to do is, like, shoot a deer and put the picture on social media, then you're probably going to use a crossbow, right? because it's so much, it is easier. I mean, like you said, there's a reason that it's there for like the older generations too, right? Or younger hunters getting into it. I mean, it's an easier platform.
Yep. I forgot the youngers. I'll give the youngers in there too.
Yeah. I do think it's like, we've seen that as a positive here since they've expanded the season, is I do think it's introduced a lot of people to bow hunting who before, especially at the younger level, who could maybe only go gun hunting. And then if you've got, like, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-old girl who doesn't necessarily love shooting a 20 gauge, you know, she can go out there and shoot a crossbow. And I do think there have been positives with it as far as introducing people to the sport. There's also just, I mean, there's definitely negatives too, like anything else. But then, yeah, it's the same guys you're talking about that you just kind of, you want to talk to them.
I just want to have a conversation.
Exactly. It's at like some point you outgrow it.
It's like a 3-month gun season, you know. I mean, crossbows are, I am confident that crossbows today are more accurate than the gun that my dad grew up slug hunting with, you know.
I would totally agree with that, yeah.
And now you can use that for 3 months, 3.5 months, and do whatever you want, you know. I mean, that they're deadly. I mean, it makes it pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's here, it's not going away. One thing I do wish that, like, what we've seen from it, one of the bad things about it is, like, our harvest totals from bow season have skyrocketed, and our gun season falls right in the middle of the rut, right in the middle of, like, peak breeding. So I worry that at some point, if nothing's done, especially because there are pockets of even Illinois where the deer herd is not great, there are other pockets where it's out of hand. But I worry that if nothing's done to kind of offset the harvest totals from the bow season now, somewhere down the road, whether it's 10 years or 50 years or 100 years, they're going to see negative impacts on our actual deer number, and then that resource is going to be extremely limited.
And, yeah, for sure.
And I mean,
because Illinois is not proactive.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. Unlike most of our neighbors, like, I don't know how you feel about Indiana, but I promise it's better than we feel about Illinois.
Did I break up there? You guys have froze on me. Are we okay to keep going?
I can hear you. You're froze, but go ahead. I'll see if I can. We can still hear you. So you're there. You're back.
Oh, there we go. So, I'm not, like, I feel sorry for Chirac, right? Like, it's just one of those things that's just kind of like, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm close to it also, right?
Yes.
2.5 hours.
I can you guys, you're actually closer than we are.
I probably am. So I can, like, it's like, but. And I understand that they're pulling, they're doing all the voting, right? And I get that. And I feel sorry for you guys, right? I do. Like, it's just one of those things. It's like, man, that's got to suck. But mm-hmm. Man, that's got to hurt.
Yep.
Or if you just come over to just drive a little bit east.
Either way, really. I mean, west or east. But
oh, yeah, I never thought about that.
It's a good thing we have pretty good deer where we're at.
Yeah.
That's true.
Probably the only thing.
Yeah.
Probably the only thing that keeps a lot of us here.
It's still good.
Yep. So, man, we're pushing up on an hour here, so I don't want to keep it too long. I know, like we talked, it's late where you're at.
And I've still not seen any cookies come in.
I don't either. I should text her. Hey, where are my cookies at?
No kidding. And Nate's going to be on it about the food. I can tell you that much. If there was supposed to be food and there's not, Nate's going to be upset.
I will file a complaint.
Oh, shoot. Well, what do you want to kind of...
Cookies with a question mark and see if she opens the door.
They were supposed to be here.
I get that look like, right. Are you serious? Eating cookies on a podcast?
They might come flying through the screen here in a second. Or a cookie sheet.
That's right.
Oh,
what were you going to say? Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, you're good. What's something that you kind of want to maybe get out there that we haven't hit on in this podcast or the last one, or just like maybe something you think should be talked about as far as VPA goes, really anything for that matter? Whether it be about broadheads or hunting or, like I said, what you guys got going on VPA, what you think people should know about you guys, anything like that you want to put out there?
Don't be afraid to call us. Like, if you have good ideas, if you have something in the industry where you think you need machined or needs to be in the archery industry, man, give us a call, send us an email. We're here to, like, solve those problems. And we've got a great team of designers and engineers and machinists that just like to tinker and figure problems out. With the VPA side, I just want to say thanks to, like, the people out there that have supported us over the past, like, since I came on in 18, right? Like, mm-hmm. Drinking from a fire hose, and just thanks for being patient with me and learning. And we really appreciate that help. And also appreciate, like, our loyal customers. There's some guys that call me every year, and there's those guys that, like, send me pictures of their harvests. And it's just like, I don't have the name or the numbers. They're just like, hey, thanks. I'm just like, I just get a number with a photo of a stinking 140 And so I'm thinking, man, this guy's weighing him.
Right.
And I'm like, or 180. Oh, thank you.
There's the cookies. Look at that. Oh, dude, those look good too.
Oh, they're so good. So good.
You can go ahead and eat one.
I'll eat one for you, Nate. Don't worry.
You better eat three or four for Nate.
I got three here, so I got it.
There you go.
It's that side. I just love that. Like just getting photos or like y'all even get cam photos from guys like, hey, this is what I've got this year.
Mm-hmm.
And just with a number, and I'll have to scroll back through to see if I can find a name. Like, man, that's so awesome. Like,
yep.
Let me know when you get the harvest. There's, it's a community.
Yes.
It really is. Like the hunting community is something special that like, we've talked about this before. Just like, it's not only like, we're a community, but also like we're even deeper of a community. Like it's like we're church, right?
Yeah.
Like we're like we're a body, and we're not only are we afraid to not talk about Jesus, but like we can also talk hunting and what that's like in our lives and how we can share stories. And there's nothing better than getting out in a 20-degree morning and watching the sun come up.
Mm-hmm.
I love it, right? It's
yep.
just my happy place.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd say that in my life, right? Like I'm 45 now, and to think about like picking up a bow at 40 thinking that I would love this, like 38 or whatever that was, I would love this like I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost up there with fishing for me.
Almost.
it's probably grown.
Yeah.
It's probably higher.
Yep. That's awesome. That's something that is really important for people, I think, to know that maybe are new to hunting or just kind of wanting to know about it, is the community. If you just go on Facebook or Instagram, you're going to see some negative stuff, but everywhere has that, right? But for the most part, I would say 90 to 95% of the interactions that we have with people, especially in the industry and just in the hunting community in general, are positive. And like you said, it is almost like church where you can go, like Nate missed that buck last year. Like I've had my share of bad shots, bad experiences, right? It's like I can go talk to my buddies and am I going to get crap for it? Maybe, but I know where it's coming from, right? And then they're going to be like, hey, man, you got to get back out there or whatever. It's positive and just a good network of people to have in life in general. But I mean, the hunting community, it's really cool. And there is a lot of positive in it. Like I said, 90 to 95% of the time, super positive. Guys are like-minded. You can talk about almost anything with them, like you said. And
yep.
And then the bottom line is what brings it all together is getting out there and seeing that sunrise in the morning and,
mm-hmm.
and chasing the next big deer or turkey or trying to catch the next big fish, whatever.
Just getting out there. It doesn't matter. Just getting out and disconnecting from this. Just like, so good.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, look, we'll let you get out of here. I don't want to take any more of your time. But I do want to say thanks for coming on again. Thanks for reaching out. And we'll for sure do it again sometime in the future too. Anytime you guys got something coming out that you want to talk about or you wanna get out there, just let me know, man. Shoot me a text or give me a call and we'll do it.
We'll do. Appreciate it. And make sure if you don't already follow us on Vantage Point Archery on all the socials. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Yep. Thanks a
lot. Nate, it was nice meeting you, dude.
Hey, you too. Take it easy.
Yep.